2023.
It's not my first sobriety date, it's not my second sobriety date, and I really never thought I would ever pick up more than one white chip. But here I am, doing it all cute. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others, and this is my home group. I want to tell you guys so much from the bottom of my heart how grateful I am that you're here, that you're still here, that a good portion of my young adulthood was like the healthy part in my 20s was spent here. I'm not going to not recognize one of my first sponsors was Ryan Angel, and you were so gracious with me, and I was way worse than I am now, and I actually have someone who is as gracious to take my bajillion phone calls, and Rachel has changed the way that I talk to myself in my head. I am much nicer to myself and loving. I thought when I came back, there was a part of me that needed to be punished. And I was like, you know, I just really respond to like hard truth. I just need somebody to like kind of verbally beat the crap out of me. And that is not who God put in my life. And I think that for a while, it took her a long time to yell at me, like months. And all in like the best way. Like, you know, she's repeated herself a lot. And I think about how gracious she is. And the best thing I can do right now is show my sponsees that same like level and like depth of love. We have the rigidity of the steps. I didn't need somebody to be meaner to me than I don't know. The way that you're doing it is exactly how God knew I needed to be treated. So thank you for your gentleness. And I know you have an amazing story, so I'm just going to let you talk. Thank you, guys.
Good evening. My name is Rachel, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Rachel.
My sobriety date is 8/28 of 2003. I have a sponsor. She knows she's my sponsor. And I sponsor women. I've actually never been asked by a man. I get really nervous. Liz, thank you so much for asking me to do this. I've actually never done this before, and it's just such an honor. And it's also such a miracle that someone thinks I'm gentle. Right? I mean, that's not me, or that's not who I was when I came in here. But, you know, the women that surrounded me when I came into this program showed me just so much love, compassion, and grace in spite of myself and kicking and screaming and being belligerent and nasty and spitting. And I mean, they taught me how to speak and how to dress. And, you know, I do try to do that today, you know, to be welcoming and loving. So to hear someone say that about me, it's just really cool. So I was born and raised in Miami-Dade County. I was always like an awkward kid, you know. I had two really loving parents that wanted me desperately. And like for a girl like me, that's super annoying, you know. They were like wanted to be around me, and like it was just a lot of fawning, and it was like way too much love, right? And I have this sweating disorder. It's called hyperhidrosis. It's like really bad right now, but it was even worse when I was a child. And my first resentment was Mrs. Gelfand in the second grade used to take my papers. You know, we had to do this thing called cursive writing back in the early 90s. And she would take my papers and pin them with clothespins at the front of the room so that they would dry. And I would just get teased incessantly. And I had braces and glasses. I was over 100 pounds by the time I was in second grade. I was bused to a separate campus for gifted classes 3 times a week. Like, nerd alert, like, I was not okay. And I just felt like all of the kids in my class had gotten this memo that, like, I was not privy to, right? They knew how to hold their hands when they were talking and like interact with each other on the playground. And I just didn't get that. You know, I just didn't know how to do that. And I thought, you know, I felt really different is what I'm trying to say. And if you don't feel different, that's okay. You know, I actually married a man. He really never felt different. You know, he was always really cool and well-liked. that's just not my life experience. And I did start getting sexually abused when I was 10 years old. I had begged my parents to go to this church by my house, and they had a pretty hard stance on it, you know, like no daughter of ours will go to any kind of church. But finally they relented, and I got to go to this church, and there was this handsome guy, or I thought he was handsome, and he was one of the youth leaders at the church, and he seemed interested in me. That should have been my first red flag, because I was 10 years old and he was 18. But, you know, I started being sexually molested in a parking lot during church service. And, like, I say that not because that makes me alcoholic or not because that makes me different even. I think a lot of us have those secrets that we come in here with, or that one thing that we're just never going to share with anyone. And that was mine. You know, I wasn't going to tell any of my peers the things that I had done, because I knew they would just know that I was damaged, you know, that I was dirty, that I wasn't okay. And like, it confirmed what I already knew. So I was in need of that first drink. So when Stephanie Ernst, who was like this skinny, blonde bombshell, right? She was like 13, asked if I wanted to walk by the trailer park that used to be in Pinecrest, but they don't want you to know that in Miami. It's like a nice area now, but it wasn't back then. It was called P-Rhine, okay, P-Rhine. And we walked by these trailer parks and went to the Quick Stop. And there was a guy named Wolfman. He was, you know, an unhoused individual. And I had been doing kind of some, like, risque stuff for myself. Like, I had gotten on the metro rail by myself. I'd gone downtown. And while I was on one of these excursions one day, I had seen this gentleman in very baggy pants with like some kind of like against all authority type shirt or whatever. Really cool to me, like caught my eye right away. And he was drinking this like orange liquid stuff. And I was like, oh, what's that? And it was MD 2020. So when I went into that Quick Stop, that's what I pointed to, the Orange Jubilee MD 2020. And I just intuitively knew that you were supposed to turn that alcohol back, you know, just like turn it up and throw it back and not stop. And from the very beginning, that was my first drink, I drank because I liked the effect. And that MD 2020, that day, I had a spiritual experience. You know, like all of a sudden I was inwardly reorganized. I can speak extemporaneously. I can be in the moment. You know, one of my favorite speakers, his name is Norm Alpie. He talks about getting downtown and getting there right now. And that's what alcohol did for me. It just brought me into the here and now. And I was okay. And it was like this relief. And, you know, I blacked out that first time. I puked. I made out with one of my friend Carrie's like older brothers, like all of the things happened, you know, and it was just like magical, and I could not wait to do it again. And I really sucked at drinking. You know, anyone that comes in here at, you know, I ended up getting sober when I was 19 years old. So I didn't have a lot of success with drinking. Nothing that I could really look towards, but I did have a lot of pride in the amount that I was able to drink, that I could keep up with the boys, you know, that I could drink MD 2020 and Mickey's Ice and like this malt liquor. Like these were like big points of pride for me. And very quickly, like the math superstars gifted thing started to fall to the wayside. And, you know, I just wanted to do hood rat stuff with my friends. And it was pretty instant for me. And I started having issues like appearing in juvenile detention centers for being publicly intoxicated, being on South Beach. And, you know, at the time, I probably still there is a law that if you're not 18 or if you're like in the vicinity of the club area, you have to be 21. And so I was getting picked up there and taken to juvenile detention. And I thought that was really cool. Like I thought those things made me really cool. And I met a boy, right? And poor guy, I met him in middle school and he would stay my hostage throughout high school. And one of the things I said when I came in here that I wasn't like you people was I had never had a DUI, but with poor Javier, he ended up having three DUIs, driving my cars. And on my third arrest as an adult, I'll just fast forward to there because it's a lot of drunkalog type stories. And you guys know what that's like, right? Like how to drink. And what makes me alcoholic is like once I start drinking, I can't control the amount that I take. And if I do try to control it, I'm definitely not enjoying it. And it's definitely not okay. And why would I even want to do that? Like, that's so unattractive to me. So I somehow got through high school, which was, I went to like four different high schools and had to go to alternative school because I got kicked out for cheating. I'm a cheater, you know, I can't do anything the right way. And I think I'm entitled to like certain outcomes that I don't work for. And I end up getting to my high school graduation. I'm inebriated. I've been drinking warm vodka all morning and taken several other substances, barely made it across the stage. That evening, after face planting in a bowl of udon with my family, who was trying to celebrate the one achievement I had ever made at that time, I ended up in Marco Island, and poor Javier was driving, and we ended up in a 25-foot ditch going into, like, off over an embankment into the Everglades and ripped the bottom out of my little Volkswagen Beetle that I had tried to make pink, but it wasn't. It was white. And it... that was like my fourth or fifth total loss. I'm a horrible driver. I mean, the poor girls that I picked up for the meeting this evening, I'm sure. I mean, I get lost. I don't pay attention. I have poor response skills. I shouldn't drive sober. So I was trying to, I pushed Javier out of, you know, the way and was trying to start the car. And a police officer had seen us go over this embankment and ran down to help us. And I apparently assaulted that gentleman and got my stomach pumped in the back of an EMS vehicle and wound up in general population of Collier County Women's Facility. And when I came to, like, I had arrived because there were all these ladies standing around me. They thought I was really funny and really cool. They put Skittles on my lips, and they took a pencil and put it under my eyes, and they told me later we could get pills. And I was like, who would ever leave this place? This is wonderful. And yeah, so when my parents came to get me, I was like, you can't take me away. These are my best friends. I can't tell you any of their names, but they're definitely my best friends. And yeah, they came and they bailed me out. And this was my third arrest at the age of 18. And this attorney, poor guy, who we had on retainer at this point, was saying things like, you know, mandatory jail time, like serious consequences. And I remember just rolling my eyes like, girls like me don't go to jail. Like, come on. Not like me. You know, I've met girls even more pretentious than me. I know it's hard to imagine. bougier than me that absolutely did go to jail. You know, thankfully that wasn't to be the case for me. I got court ordered into treatment for a year. The first place that I went, I didn't follow any of the rules. I was just sleeping with everyone. There was a Spanish program there, and me and Spanish men, I can't. So I got sent to an all-women's facility outside of Jackson, Mississippi, in a place called Goshen Springs. And there I heard a therapist talking and saying that this guy on the other side of the moat was toxic to the therapeutic community. My little ears perked up. And I got a note over a moat. You know, we met in the moonlight at like 1 a.m. He was everything I thought he would be. Like, treatment center love is so real and true. Like, I work in treatment now, and when people tell me about it, I'm like, oh, man, I get it. But, like, we have to ask you to leave now. So, yeah, we left together AMA, you know, and at that point, I hadn't completed all of the treatment that I needed, and my parents started going to this really annoying place called Al-Anon and telling me things when I would call them that they were detaching from me with love, and it got really, really dark for me, you know. I didn't have any of those people that, like, loved me around me, like the Javiers and the Katies, who had been in my life in Miami. And I started doing things for that next drink that I just never thought I would do, you know, things I couldn't catch my eye in the mirror over. And I moved this guy who had been giving me money into my two-bedroom apartment with me and my boyfriend, and he was 55. And we were just one big, happy, dysfunctional family. And he ended up shooting himself in the head, and I found him. And the first thing I thought when I saw him in that state was lucky. Because I knew he had the same kind of brain that raced and ripped all the time, like mine, those thoughts that are just incessant and don't stop. And I knew that it was, like, done for him, and I was jealous. But you know, I didn't know at that time that, like, I was a week and a half away from my sobriety date, right? Like, how dark it is before the dawn. And I promise you that if I had not found a sufficient substitute in Alcoholics Anonymous, I would not be here 21 years later. You know, like, I'm able to match calamity with serenity in these rooms. I've been through death. I've been through, I'm going through something right now that is really hard, you know, and I'm trying to walk through it with as much grace and dignity as I can. I've been given a lot of gifts here, you know, like gifts that I really can never, ever, ever repay. That's why I continue to say yes to this program, because, like, every good thing in my life is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I definitely came here to scoff, but I sure hope that I get to stay here and pray. Thank you guys so much.